I'm Kay Bess, and this is The Beehive. Women in Voiceover, the voices of the fairer sex that keep the wheels of commerce and creativity moving in this country. Voices you hear every day, but names you likely don't know until now. Welcome to The Beehive, everybody. Today, my guest is Rebecca Davis.
Rebecca has been voicing Vanity Fair's audio editions for about 3 years. They are downloadable on Audible or Amazon.com. She is doing her first recurring role, playing Fiona, the big brassy new girl in town on the animated series Lego Friends. And one of her favorite voiceover jobs was playing a sassy newscaster in the final season of How I Met Your Mother on CBS. Rebecca Davis, welcome to The Beehive.
Thank you for having me.
You and I we haven't known each other for very long.
No, we haven't. Yeah.
I mean, I've heard your name in different circles, but we sort of traveled in different ones for a while, up until maybe a year ago?
Yeah. You know, I remember the first time I met you in person, actually.
Really?
I had heard your name, too, you know, in the circles and stuff. And it was at the SAG-AFTRA Foundation poker night.
Oh, okay.
The one that was in Santa Monica at the airport hangar.
Yeah. I think that's the last one that they did.
They're supposed to be doing it again.
Yeah. But sometimes you have to take a year off.
It's a big event.
It is a big event. So I want to know, first off, how long you've been doing voiceover. And how you got into it?
Yeah, it goes back pretty far when I had my first job, which was 1998, I think. I was living in Austin, Texas at the time.
Okay.
And my agent sent me on an audition for anime when dubbing. I was like, what? What is this? I had no idea.
Was this an on-camera agent? Was it a voice? It was an on-camera agent.
It was an on-camera agent down in Austin.
Okay.
I didn't really know much about voiceover at all at that point. And I went in and I was like, oh, this is great. And I loved it. My first booking was playing this alien, but four different versions of the alien. So I got to, you know, explore all this stuff. And then I was working with them some more and doing recurring characters in different series. And I loved it. And I took a class down there after that to kind of perfect it. And then I left Austin and moved to LA and came here for grad school. So I just kind of put all that aside and forgot it. And I was in my bubble of acting for a long time and then finished school and was doing, you know, the actor stuff, doing the on camera, doing commercials, doing a lot of stage work. And I wasn't very happy. I was like, what's going on? I was trying to figure it out. And I did An Artist's Way. I think it was 12 weeks.
Yeah.
It's a very spiritual kind of thing. And it kept coming back to when you're making these lists of the things that you want to do and whatnot. I kept mentioning voiceover and kind of remembering how much I loved doing that. Yeah. And at the end of it, the people in the group were like, why aren't you doing this? This is what you want to do. And kind of had that realization. Oh, yeah. And I switched all my focus.
Yeah.
I stopped pursuing on camera, and I was doing, you know, well. I was doing okay with commercials and stuff like that.
Which is amazing. It's very hard to do.
Yeah. But I just couldn't deal with it. There are parts of that.
It's difficult. It's a different world.
It's a different world.
It is.
And once I just stopped putting my energy and my focus all into that and put it into voiceover, man, I was happier.
Yeah.
You know, it's still always a struggle, but it just, all in all, I was doing what I really wanted to do that I had forgotten about.
Yeah. So did you start by taking a class here, or is that sort of, okay, I want to do this voiceover thing. What's my first step? And what was that? You took a class?
Exactly. Yeah. I started with classes because I knew I don't really know how to work a mic. This is a different approach to everything.
Yeah.
This is what I really want to be doing. I need to perfect this, you know, as much as I can or really understand
Get comfortable in the setting.
Yeah, because I come from a stage background, and so it's a different kind of very big commercial. They want you very small and, you know, voiceovers, all of those levels.
Yeah.
So I started taking classes.
Who'd you take classes from?
My first commercial class was with Kalmanson and Kalmanson.
Okay.
And my first animation class was with Bob Bergen. I got so lucky with that one because his waiting list is usually...
That's huge.
Years and
yeah.
years.
Yeah.
And I asked him if I could come and audit the first class. He's like, yeah, sure. Come on down. So I'm sitting there and apparently that night, it was the first class, one girl just canceled and wasn't coming at all. And he just turned to me and was like, well, you're here and you've been here for the first class. You want to keep going? I was like, yes. Yes, I do.
How serendipitous.
Oh, it really was. It really. And Bob and I have talked about that since then, how it just worked out for me.
Yeah. I have heard his class is fantastic.
Yeah, it yeah. really is. Excellent. So yeah. And then I still keep taking classes.
And know. Who do you take from?
Goodness.
Like a variety of people and just sort of what sounds interesting?
Or? Yeah. I try to work with different coaches because I know everyone has a different approach.
Yes.
You know, Kalmanson's approach is different than VoiceCaster.
Yes.
It's different than TalkShop. It's different. You know, over the years, you know, every once in a while I'll start taking another class. But I'm also constantly working with coaches. I'm going to be taking Richard Horvitz's second level class. I'm very excited about going back into animation and stuff. And I'll take promo classes with like Jeff Howell, Jody Gottlieb, Dave Walsh. Pretty yeah. much I've made the rounds.
Yeah.
You know?
That's so smart because everybody does have a different style and they all bring a unique perspective to it. And I don't think there is one right way.
Yeah.
One right way to get to a great read.
Yeah.
You know, so it's great to pick up technique and little pieces here and there from different folks.
Yeah.
So that's really
the things that
that's smart.
You connect with something that work for you. You know,
yeah.
it's the same
yeah,
with acting
yeah.
as like Stanislavski or Meisner.
Yeah.
Some people can't do one or
yeah.
the other, you know?
And it's so funny when you, I always think like when you, certainly in the acting world where, you know, I just finished a 2-year program in Meisner, right? And just the sort of thing of like, oh, I don't like Meisner. It's like, well, you know, the purists, right? Or there's only Meisner.
Yeah.
You know, everything
yeah.
else is, you know, subpar. And it's like, well, that's not really true. It just depends upon what works for you as an individual actor. And we're all different. And, you know.
Exactly.
So that's very, very wise. Very smart.
Thanks.
Very smart. What is your favorite arena of voiceover? Commercial, promo, animation, games? What do you love the most?
My instinct on that one is always animation.
Yeah.
I love delving into characters and having that work. I mean, granted, that kind of style blends itself in all genres where you
sure.
are going into a, you know, character or you're talking from your own point of view and yeah. different things.
Yeah.
But
even as an announcer, yeah.
Yeah, yeah. You have to find the point of view because sometimes you might not personally agree with that. So
yeah.
you're like, okay, who does?
Yeah.
But animation is just... Again, coming from the acting and stage and for all my life, being able to just play like that
yeah.
is so much fun. Like, that's what I really want to be doing the most of. And video games, it's the same kind of thing of character work.
So do you look outside those two worlds that, you know, that you're really kind of attached to and that you love and you go, huh, that thing out there is quite a challenge to me. Might I step out and try that new thing, you know, in voiceover that doesn't necessarily sort of fit within my comfort zone? Like for me, it's the opposite. Like I've lived in commercial narration promo for so mm-hmm. long that at a certain point a few years ago, I sort of turned and went, gaming, animation, what's that about? And it was scary to me.
Yeah.
You know, it wasn't that, even though I had an acting background, it wasn't that, oh, let me delve into a character. I spent 25 years doing announcing things. And so to get inside of a character was like, wow, that's going to require a lot of me.
Yeah.
you know? So I don't mean to make it sound so mysterious, but you know, do you look at something and go, wow, narration would be a challenge for me or that kind of thing?
That's exactly the one I was going to say.
Okay.
Narration and audiobooks too.
Yeah.
I have mad respect for people who do audiobooks.
So do I.
Oh my gosh.
I don't have it
you
in me.
You guys, whoever does it. I don't have it in me.
Yeah.
I don't have the technical and the editing and the
oh my god,
stamina.
The focus, the stamina.
Oh
yeah.
my gosh. Like mad
I know.
To them, really. So that intimidates me.
Yeah.
And narration definitely intimidates me in the same way of the stamina and the really understanding what you're talking about. Medical stuff is so incredibly intimidating. People who again, I mad props for people who actually make it make sense. There are other genres that intrigue me that don't scare me as much, but I want to
And what are those?
Really go, right now it's promo.
Okay.
I am loving promo. And that's something where I'm like, okay, I am going to take more classes in this because I want to master it.
Yeah.
So that's what I'm doing right now.
And how are your agents with that? Are they supportive? Are they like, yeah, we'll send you a copy?
Yeah, they are supportive. Good. And they are sending me that copy, which is exciting.
That is exciting.
That's recognized. And, yeah. You know, and I'm working on the demo, and it's a two-way street with your agent. I'm
for
asking
sure.
them like, hey, is there anyone that you think I should go coach with to work on this some more, or, you know, stuff like that? But they are supportive of that.
When you teach, and I'm sure you've spoken to people who are intrigued by voiceover and or who are new to it and are perplexed by the relationship with the agent. It's like, how do I communicate with my agent? You know, they seem so scary, like they're in total control of your life and your career, and
yeah.
It's, you know, and there's always the question of how do I communicate? I don't want to bother them. I don't want, you know, but how do I let them know I'm here and that I exist and that I, you know, I want copy. And what you just pointed out, I think is so important, that you include them, you include your agents in those kinds of decisions. It's you're going to take classes. Well, who better to ask but your agents, which you get their feedback. They see your drive, your interest, your willingness,
mm-hmm.
right? That's how you communicate with an agent.
Yeah.
You know? As opposed to, I'm going to call every Friday and check and see if there's copy for me. You know, it's like that's not the thing. You let your agents know that you trust them and you want their advice.
Yeah.
You want their perspective. And
that you're proactive.
And that you're proactive.
You're not just sitting around waiting for them to call. I mean, I was in that mindset before. I was terrified.
We all were. I know very few people who weren't, but it's something you kind of figure out, like, oh, these are just, they're people.
Yeah. They're just
people
like
with lives and spouses and children and desires and wants, and they want to go on vacation and they go grocery shopping, you know, like they're people.
Yeah. They're not this like, kind of thing.
Yeah. And they don't necessarily always have all the answers, and that's, you just got to let them know who you are, but in collaboration, you
mm-hmm.
know, so it's a really good point you bring up. So describe for me a day in the life of Rebecca Davis. And let's assume that this day is a day where you have a job and you've got some emails some auditions in your inbox, and maybe you have an appointment for lunch and people coming over for dinner.
Let's just roll all that in.
Because there's always complication in the day of, you know, a day in the life, right? So what does your day look like when you get up at this time?
Average day, let's see. I'm usually up by 7 o'clock, if not sometimes earlier, depends. My husband and I, every morning, we walk together for at least a half an hour. We walk our dog, which is great. That's our time.
Yeah.
It's the time in the beginning of the day where we're not like exhausted, and we get to talk about life and what's this and let's schedule this and, you know, things like that. It's really important for
bonding.
Us.
Bonding.
Yeah.
It's nice.
And our dog too. It's always nice. Get a little exercise. Anyway, so that happens. And then usually back by 8, I think, sometimes a little later, 8:30, something like that. And then, you know, I spend like a half an hour on Facebook. But first of
that's
all,
pretty
I
good.
Check my
just
email.
A half hour. That's fantastic.
That's the first part of the day. It is a distraction.
For sure.
But then, well, first, before I do that, I check my emails and take care of any auditions that I was just too tired to do the night before. That's always a battle.
What time are they usually due?
They're usually due at 9 or 10. Or 4 p.m.
Okay.
For the ones that are through my agents. Sometimes I have regional agents, and they're usually due at like 1 p.m. or something like that.
Mm-hmm.
But it's either first thing or end of the day. Okay. And then sometimes, like many of us, I'll get those emails with, you know, at 6 o'clock or 7 o'clock for an audition that's due first thing in the morning. But, you know, I've got plans that night, or I'm out, or I'm in a class and I don't get home till 10:30. And I just think it's going to show in my audition that I'm at the end of my day and exhausted. So get up and rush through it in the morning.
Yeah.
Kind of thing.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. And this morning I had a bunch of auditions to do before I came here. So I got up extra early. I got up at 6:30. So I knew, all right, I'm going to get these done. So then I do whatever needs to be done that day and putz around on Facebook a little bit more. love-hate relationship with that right now.
Right? Yes, I know. Brutal.
Really. It's one of my favorite things. It's some of my least favorite things. And then usually something else will come in. And then I'll try to, if I don't have lunch plans, I'm getting better at this of, I used to eat my lunch at my desk, responding to emails. And now I'm, okay, leave my office, leave my studio, sit down, have a nice lunch, hang out with my dog. But then I've been trying really hard to get out and meet with people. And then sometimes I do go to my agent's office. Mm-hmm. So when I do that, it's middle of the day, get me out and going. So that happens. Usually go back home, more auditions. And then it's either dinner. My husband usually comes home around, whether he wants me to say this or not. My husband usually comes home around 8 o'clock at night. So we have late dinner.
Okay.
And then I really try to make that time. And some people disagree with me on this. Everyone's got a different way of doing it.
Sure.
But that time is TV time after dinner where we both just unwind.
Yeah.
Watch our shows.
Yeah.
Relax. I know some people who work till 10 or 11 o'clock at night, and power to them.
Not me.
Yeah. No. I can't do it.
Yeah.
But usually at that time, if I have a class or a workout group or something like that. Oh, and I go and I work out with my trainer three times a week.
Twice a week.
Do
they come to you or do you go?
I go to them.
Okay.
So that's a big, like, half an hour to get there, an hour of working out, half an hour back. So I got to count that in.
What's your gym?
It's not a gym. I have a trainer who works out of her house, has her own built-in studio.
Nice.
Which is great. It's great. So I go there and it's always nice. You know, there are a couple of my colleagues go as well.
That's great.
And, you know, it's nice chat time too, unwind. But getting moving, because I find, you know, it's easy to be sitting down all day when I don't go out. And, you know, I've realized I've eaten everything and I haven't been moving.
Yeah.
So that's one of my goals this year, is to at least get out and take a walk if I'm home all day.
One of the perils, right, of working from home as a voice actor.
Like, yeah.
Sometimes you could, no problem, never leave your house.
Yeah.
And never move. And you know.
Sometimes you realize, I haven't showered in 2 days.
Oh, that happens a lot with me. Like, wow, maybe I should shower. That'd be a good thing to put on the top of the list for the day. That's a great day.
It's a good day. And then, oh my goodness, then the days that I actually, you know, have bookings, forget about that in there. And that's always, I mean,
it shifts everything around.
Great days.
Yeah. But it shifts everything.
Yeah, it does. That's when I'm doing auditions in my car kind of days.
Yeah. I never, ever, ever mastered that.
Oh, they're not great auditions. They don't sound fantastic, but sometimes you got to pull over.
I've done stuff on my iPhone before, just like with nothing, just my iPhone. Nothing attached or anything. I send them in and, you know, my agent will go back and go, it's not, the quality is just not. And I'll say it too. I'll say, this quality is like unacceptable to me, but I'm sending it to you in case you know the buyer and they're fine with it. Kind of a thing.
Yeah.
But man, I just like, blah.
And that's something in workshops that I've taken a lot of casting directors, mainly in animation that I've said this, in video games, which is, if your audio is horrible, I can't give it to producers. Maybe your audition is great, but I can't pass it on.
Yeah.
And that's important. And I don't think I've ever done an animation audition in my car, but I did have to do an audition once at an airport. Twice I've had to do that. That was a challenge.
I bet.
Yeah, that was a big challenge.
Did you find a corner in the, like?
Yeah, one time I tried a bathroom.
It's so boomy in there. I mean,
it did not go well. I had like my jackets over my head, just trying. It did not go well. And then one time I got one of those ASAP, I need it right now. And I said, I'm about to get on an airplane. Like, do it. And I found this one corridor in between two sliding doors. And just worked on it right there. And of course, like a minute before I got on the flight, the agent was like, you need to record this when you get home. I'm like, I'm getting home at midnight. But that's our job.
Yeah.
So,
I've had that happen before too, where it's like, record it now. Yeah, the quality's not good. You just need to record it later. Yeah. And if you get enough of those and you go, listen, I'm going to tell you, it's not going to be good enough quality. Yeah. So I'm just going to record it when I get home.
You know, good for some people who have their whole travel rig,
their
car. Good for you.
I think it depends upon the jobs. I mean, if you do, affiliate stuff, I know, Roberta Solomon. Do you know Roberta?
I don't.
She lived in the Midwest for a really long time, and then she just moved to Oregon, and she's not constantly, but many times over the last couple of years, I've seen her post things about, I had to do an affiliate thing and at the airport, but she has a rig enough that, it's good enough so that it goes to broadcast. I mean,
yeah.
So she's got her stuff with her, you know, so.
Joe Cipriano, I know, is like that too.
Yeah.
He's always working and doing affiliate and promos and everything right away. And he talks about his.
Yeah. I mean, I can carry my rig to a hotel if I travel, right? No problem. Wonderful pillow forts. And I just got these and I'm so excited because they fold up. And it actually, this attaches to your mic stand.
Oh, nice.
Does that make sense? Right.
Yeah.
So I'm going to, that'll be part of my,
that's like a travel,
my
one.
Travel rig, right? I'm referring to these like baffling things that are in my little podcast studio. So I realize nobody who's listening can see what I'm
talking about. Pretty, everybody.
They're quite lovely and they have a lovely curvy shape and.
They kind of look like they could be a medieval torture device if it wasn't made of foam.
Yeah. For sure. Yeah. If they were metal spikes, it would be painful, I think. Yeah. Anyway, I didn't mean to interrupt you, but I just realized nobody's going to know what I'm talking about. So.
Just talking about travel stories. So early on before I had I did have my Apogee with me, but I got an audition for a video game. One of those like down, far, far, one of those really crazy ones.
He's coming.
Exactly. Yeah. And my husband and I were in Jamaica and we were on a resort. We had one of those rooms where they were all screen windows. You couldn't actually, you know, there was no glass. You couldn't shut your windows.
Oh, gosh.
And I
think I know where this is going.
I mean, I had my husband holding me and there aren't a lot of pillows. It's just like holding a giant comforter blanket over me and helping me out, and I was so conscious about people in this completely relaxing, beautiful place hearing me just screaming,
help me.
Oh my gosh. I felt so bad for everybody at that moment.
Yeah, you do often think, can my neighbors hear me screaming for my life? You know, like they're going to call the police one of these days.
Well, when my neighbors, we had new neighbors move in, and even the neighbors next door, I had to go tell them, you know, this is my job. And so when you hear me screaming sometimes or crying really loudly, we're okay. There's no violence in my home. Just doing this, because there are times where, my gosh, they must wonder what is going on in there.
Home studios, man, they're a mixed blessing.
Yeah.
And they do, they make your life interesting for sure. So how long ago was it that you came from Austin? Was it Austin?
Were
in Austin. How long ago was it? How long have you been in LA?
Goodness, I moved here the end of 2000.
Okay.
Yeah, which is crazy to me.
Yeah,
I've lived here longer than any other place in my life now, I think.
Right.
Just about. Yeah.
And so when you did the Artist Way, mm-hmm. what do you remember what year that was?
Yeah, it was, I actually just found this out recently. I took my first voiceover class in 2008.
Okay.
Yeah, so there was a long time there that I was.
So
I was
like 9 years you've been like, I think this is what I want to do. Like you started your focus about 9 years ago.
Yeah.
Is that right?
Yeah. When I was taking my first class and I was doing touring children's theater, working in animal hospitals. Yeah, I was taking classes for a while before I felt confident enough to dive in and start working.
Which leads me to my next question,
yes.
which is interesting odd jobs that you've had. Or there might not even be odd, but just interesting jobs while in the pursuit of your career in voiceover.
Yeah. Was I waiting tables? I don't think not since I've gotten to LA have I waited tables.
Wow. Impressive.
I don't think so. I'm trying to think about that. I did a lot of waiting tables and bartending in Austin. Animal hospital, working administration in animal hospital for a while. Touring children's theater for a long time. Teaching Shakespeare in the schools. I did a lot of teaching drama with kids, and it was a, I don't remember the term, affiliate teaching artist, something like that. Teaching artists through the Center Theater Group and the Amundsen for a while.
Oh, fantastic.
Which was really enjoyable. I loved working with the kids. I was casting assistant for a while, which was very eye-opening. That was in the very, very beginning.
Was that for on camera?
It was on camera and a little bit of voiceover. It was mostly on camera. Oh, I did do a little bit of catering work here. I remember doing HBO was at the Emmy party one night, just being starstruck, that kind of thing. And be like, okay, keep yourself together. And it was the early time of LA.
Yeah. Like, I bartended at a, no, I'm sorry. I served cocktails at a New Year's Eve. It was hell.
Oh,
it was
gosh.
Hell. At a New Year's Eve party in some, I don't remember the hotel, downtown LA. Oh, and this was not, I mean, downtown is kind of groovy right now.
Now
kind
it
of
is,
a great,
but
great little place to hang. But back then it was just really scary. And so it was in this hotel, and this place, it was packed. It was packed. And so to walk through with a tray, it was just ridiculous. And I remember I served cocktails to Jack Nicholson and Houston, Angelica Houston. And they were sitting at this booth, and, you know, and it was, you know, as the night progressed, it got so crowded that somebody would give me an order and I would go to get the order and I would come back and I couldn't find the people who ordered their drinks. It was ridiculous. And so I just left. It's like, what am I going to do? I can't find anyone. You know, I can't find, well, you order your drink. It takes me 45 minutes just to walk to the bar, and then I'm going to come back and you're gone. Bye. I got to go. You know, this question, I'm sort of like, I have this little, I'm kind of obsessed with finding out sort of the worst things that have happened to people.
Okay.
Like only in you know, in their careers, only because I always think that it's the worst moments that propel you toward your best moments, right? And so I'm just curious if you've had a job where you were just like, oh man, I messed that up so bad and maybe I should hang it up.
Well, the first thing that comes to mind, I don't know if it's necessarily where I was like, oh, I just screwed this up, but it was a horrible situation where I had recently broken my hand. So I had a big cast on my arm and it was very recent. So I was still, you know, in a lot of pain, but dealing.
Yeah.
And I had a session and it was at this guy's house, but it was he's this Grammy Award winner and worked on all these movies as well. So he had this big professional studio in the basement. So it wasn't like creepy, I'm going to some guy's house or something
yeah.
like that.
Yeah.
So I pull up to his driveway and I opened the door and I was getting something out and had no idea that, well, basically I took a step back and went over a ledge into a plant, rolled onto the sidewalk because he had a raised driveway. There's no like, I don't know if I should have known. I probably should have known. I'm very clumsy. There's no rail or anything like that. And I just flipped back. It was horrible. And so I'm laying on the ground. My ankle's all twisted up. I'm all scraped up. And I'm like, I don't know what to do. And this
and you
is
already have a broken hand.
I already have a broken hand.
Oh,
already in
God.
A cast.
Okay.
And this isn't a secret. I have epilepsy. And so sometimes panic and symptoms of a seizure get a little mixed up.
Yeah.
And I'm laying there on the ground, half crying, half like, what is going on? I don't know what's happening. Thinking like, oh, I think I'm about to have a seizure. What's going on? And this guy runs up to me and he's like, are you okay? I'm like, no. I don't know what's happening. He's like helping me up and all this stuff. And I'm still really out of it. And I was like, I'm Rebecca. You know, like I'm trying to be nice while this is happening. And I don't remember his name. And I probably shouldn't. He introduced himself. And I said, oh, you're my director today. It's like, oh, I was so embarrassed. It was so embarrassed. And then I'm just like, still tongue tied. I was
oh
so
my
sorry.
Gosh.
No, it's okay. It's okay. And he helps me. I'm like limping in the house. And I get in and they're like, do you need a little bit of time? I'm like, let's do this.
Let's do this.
I was just so out of my mind. And I just went into the booth. And I was really proud of myself for working through it. But I was also very much like, what are you doing?
Yeah.
Your ankles, why are you here? You need to go. And I still kind of remember that session of being like, okay, I'm going to stand on one leg for a while. Okay, I need to sit. I need to put my arm up.
Oh my gosh,
I like
look
doing
at you.
I have one picture from that session of me being like, hey, I don't think that performance was any good that day, but you know, like, what do you do? Say,
yeah, this is a dedicated
woman. Let's reschedule.
Yeah. Let's reschedule. Yeah.
Yeah. What do you do? You carry on.
You carry on because they're going to lose money if you reschedule. Yeah. Like, I know this director came in from out of town for this and all this stuff. And
was it for a game?
It was for a video game. Yeah. It was
oh my gosh. It's not like it could have been a 10-minute session for a commercial. Yeah, it had to be a big, long 4-hour thing.
It was a long session too. I mean, they were super great about it. They kept saying like, do you need some breaks? You know, and I would take them, but I could feel my adrenaline going down.
Yeah.
I just knew if I don't, once I connect with the pain that's really happening, I'm out.
And so when you left the session, I mean, had you like sprained your ankle?
Yes. God. It was so swollen. I ended up going to the doctor and getting it checked out and, you know, the whole ice thing and everything. It was so stupid.
I see you falling over backwards. I'm okay.
And I'm like, okay. Oh, God. And every time in the house I walk sometime in that area where the house is. And every time I go by and I'm like, yep. Right there. That's where that happened.
That
like,
was that day.
And I'm so clumsy. So it was really par for the course for me. But I don't know if that fits into the, like, a bad session you want to walk out of.
Oh, well, that's a crappy day on the job is what that is.
Yeah. But there are sessions that I've had where, you know, like all of us do, and I'd like to think that all of us do, where I'm not. This is.
Yeah.
I don't feel good about this. Am I doing okay? And your confidence and you're second guessing everything and. But we have to, you know, I grapple with that all the time, but we have to work through that.
You know, I happened on a session, this was years ago, it was a commercial session, and it was at LA Studios, and there were three of us on this job, and I was part of a dialogue with somebody else, or I actually can't remember my part in it, but another voice actor, Steve Mackle. I don't know if you know Steve.
That's a great name,
Steve
though.
Steve Mackle. No. He's a great guy. He's been around a long time, and he does comedy stuff for NBC, comedy promos. Anyway, he's a great guy, and just he has such a happy countenance, you know, and is just joyful to be around, right? Anyway, so they had hired all of us. I think it was one of those, they hired all of us without auditioning. And it was one of those, you know, calls to agents. I need this kind of person. Nice. And the agent recommends, and then you go in. And so they had wanted a really good, solid, strong male announcer. So brought in Steve Mackle. He does comedy promos for, you know what I mean? He has sort of a lighthearted, he has a very distinct sound, but just very lighthearted, you know? And they kept saying, can you read this just with a little bit lower register. And so he would sort of try to do that. And then there'd be silence in the, you know, the other people on the other side of the glass, they're all talking amongst themselves and there's quiet and we're waiting. And then they come and they're directing Steve again. Well, can you do it? Can you do this? And more talking and, you know, silence. And they clearly weren't getting from him what they wanted. And Steve had the wherewithal to say, you know what, you guys? I'm not your guy. Oh, he said, there are a million guys in this town who can give you exactly what you want in one take. And so you don't have to keep trying to, you don't have to feel bad. You don't have to like make me feel better. I'm just not your guy. And there was this kind of collective exhale, you know, from the people, you know, in the studio. And they were like, thank you so much. You know, they were so grateful.
Wow.
And he, to me, what a pro, you know, that he was concerned enough about their product, what they wanted, what they needed. And he knew we're not everybody's guy, you know?
Yeah.
So those times when you're doing a job and you think, you know, I might be replaced, you know, because this isn't going the way I think that they're hoping, you know, and you kind of have to just say, okay, well, that's okay. I'm, and he got his session fee, you know, for the day. All is not lost, but still it was a great example to me of knowing who you are and knowing what you do and having great confidence in what that is. And as soon as you have that, then you can kind of let go of the fact that you can't do everything.
Yeah.
You know?
Yeah.
Or that they sometimes just want somebody who sounds different than you.
And you just know?
Has nothing
not
to do
you.
With good or bad.
Yeah.
It just sounds different, you know.
Yeah. There's definitely a job that I think I was, you know, in retrospect, you're telling that story. I'm like, oh, I bet they did replace me on that one. It was like the dubbing for a foreign TV series. And it was just a little 7-year-old girl or something like that who was really sick. And now I think about it, it was 5 minutes of, can you do it this? Do it this? Do it this? Do it this?
Yeah.
And I don't think I ever got it. Oh, well.
Yeah.
Move on.
Yep. Happens. I think it happens to everybody.
Yeah. And it's nice to think that it does happen to everybody.
Yeah. It helps to know. It helps to know. So we are coming to the end here.
Oh, goodness.
So it does fly. But I am going to ask you just rapid fire some questions that are from the Actors Studio.
I should have prepared that. I didn't
know. No. There is no preparation.
That's true. Boy.
That's what it is.
All right.
So here we go. Ready?
Yes.
What's your favorite word?
Rapid fire. I'm horrible at this. My favorite word, glitter. Sparkles. No, sparkles.
What's your least favorite word?
Moist.
Okay, you're the second person to say moist.
Really?
Yeah.
That word makes me feel so icky.
What turns you on?
Laughter. Happiness. My husband.
What turns you off?
Oh, God. Mean people.
What sound or noise do you love?
Anyway, my niece is laughing. And my dog's snoring.
What sound or noise do you hate?
Oh, gosh. Ugh, my dog, the sound my dog makes when he's in pain.
Oh,
it's the worst.
What profession other than your own would you like to attempt?
Oh, goodness. I wouldn't now, but I used to want to be an astronomer. Right now, nonprofit organizational activist.
What profession would you not like to do?
A proctologist. There's my rapid fire one.
There you go. If heaven exists, what would you like to hear God say to you when you arrive at the pearly gates?
Welcome to the party.
Where can listeners find you? They want to connect.
My website, which is www.RebeccaDavisVO.com.
Are you on Twitter?
Oh, yes. I am on Twitter as Rebecca Davis VO. I had to think about that for a second. My Instagram is different.
And what's your Instagram?
Oh, my Instagram is Rebecca's Voice.
Fantastic.
You'll find Ninja there. I have to drop for Ninja.
And you guys are going to have to go there to know who Ninja is. Rebecca Davis, thank you so much for being here.
Thank you for having me. This is a lot of fun.
Thanks for joining me today in the Beehive. For podcast notes, pictures, and more information on my guests, visit the podcast website, thebeehivepodcast.com. Find me at my website, kbess.com. Follow me on Twitter at kbess and subscribe to my channel on YouTube. If you've a mind to, please post a review of the podcast on iTunes. Kind words are like honey, sweet to the soul and good for the bones. Come back for more Women in VoiceOver next time in the Beehive. Yeah.